now my pleasure to introduce to you our panelists for this evening. They're here live. I'd first like to ask Connie Tobias to start making her way on to the stage, please. Connie has flown over 66 different kinds of aircraft, including being the first, so far, only woman to successfully fly an exact replica of the 1903 Wright Flyer. She is a major airline pilot with more than 21,000 flight hours, 10 years as captain. She also performs a reenactment role as Harriet Quimby, that first woman I told you about a little while ago who got her pilot's license in 1911, 100 years ago. And she'll be telling you more about Harriet. And like Harriet, who flew a Blériot, Connie's also flown a Blériot, and there's one here on the grounds at Oshkosh. If you hadn't had a chance to see it, please go by and see it here this week. Our second panelist, if she will make her way onto the stage, please, is another Connie, Connie Bolin. Connie is joining us tonight with several experiences as well. She has flown as a captain for Delta Airlines for over 33 years. I had to check my typing there.
I'm only 29.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Must be a typo. It's a typo. Okay. But also very important here at EAA, Connie has served various roles in the organization, the affiliate group of EAA, Warbirds of America. In fact, she's even served as their vice president, treasurer, and other roles throughout the years. And she flies all those wonderful Warbird airplanes, and she'll be telling you more about that this evening as well. Our third guest, if she would make her way onto the stage, Captain Kay Heyer. Captain Heyer has graduated from the U.S. Naval Aviation Academy. She is a commanding officer in the Naval Reserve Unit, and she'll be telling you more about the Naval Centennial maybe a little bit tonight. She has over 3,400 hours, 711 hours in space, and that's because Captain Heyer is an astronaut. So we want to welcome all of these ladies here to the dais this evening and ask them please to be seated. Well, Connie, we mentioned it's this 100th anniversary of Harriet Quimby. Maybe tell us a little bit about Harriet and kind of flying she did. What was a little bit about her background? Who was she?
Harriet Quimby was born on the 11th of May in 1875 in that great state of Michigan. And as we have some Michigan people here. And as a young girl, she helped her mother sell herbal remedies off of a wagon. They had the best liver invigorator around. But that's where Harriet learned to tell a very good story. And she learned salesmanship, or saleswomanship, in her case. And that came in mighty handy when, in 1903, she traveled to New York City alone to secure a job as a photojournalist with Leslie's Illustrated Weekly. That's the predecessor to what you might know as Life magazine today. She wrote 250 articles for Leslie's Illustrated Weekly from 1903 to 1912. She wrote about the Broadway plays. She wrote about automobiles and the maintenance of automobiles, Chinese culture. She got some politicians in trouble because they were doing some things that they shouldn't have been doing. And she went out and covered a automobile race, a car race. And she rode in a race car. And some of you may not know that race cars in the early 1900s went over 100 miles an hour. Harriet lost her hat, but she didn't seem to mind. She also covered the 1910 Belmont Air Races on Long Island, New York, where the men took those flying machines and raced around the Statue of Liberty and came back, and Jean Moisant was the winner. And that's when Harriet said to herself and to her friends, "You know, I think I can do that, and I will." Well, her saleswomanship kicked in, and she went to her boss at Leslie's Illustrated Weekly, and she suggested that Leslie's pay for her flying lessons, what a deal would that be, if she wrote about learning to fly. And indeed, they did agree to that, and the readership soared with this woman becoming the first licensed woman pilot, and Harriet became that woman on the August the 1st, 1911. Her license is number 37. It's sanctioned by the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale, and it was administered by the Aero Club of America. Two nights later, she flew a night flight, but it wasn't documented very well. But on September the 4th, 1911, it was a Monday, Labor Day, at the Richmond County Fair, she flew 7 minutes in a Moisant monoplane, And there were 15,000 people at that particular event, and she made $1,500. Now, that's 1911, $1,500. And she thought, well, now this is a lucrative thing to fly and to write with her Leslie's Weekly. So she joined the Moissant flying team, and she became the first woman to fly over Mexico at President Madero's inauguration. And that's where Harriet got her idea that she wanted to be the very first woman to fly a Bellario across the English Channel from Dover, England, at the Dover Castle there, that 22 miles over that treacherous, cold water of the English Channel to Calais, France. Indeed, she did that on the 16th of April, 1912. Now, what should have astounded the world and she would have been front page news, she wasn't. Because the night before, in the early hours of the 15th of April, 1912, the Titanic sank. And Harriet was upstaged by an iceberg. Talk about timing. Well, when she got back to the United States, New York City, continued her flying and her journalism, she contracted for $100,000 worth of air meets and air shows in 1912. Now, that's a lot of money, but actually collecting it may be something else. On the 7th of July, 1912, she was slated by Postmaster Hitchcock to fly the airmail from Boston to New York City. But unfortunately, on the 1st of July, 1912, Harriet fell to her death. Now, if you take a look at the Bellario and you look at the over-camber, under-camber wing, 7.5 degrees angle of incidence on the body of the aircraft, and that over-camber, under-camber lifting tail surface, maybe you can figure out why that a certain angle of descent and a certain speed, those old monoplanes used to stand right on their nose and catapult the people out. Harriet was safety conscious, and she had written about restraining devices, and it's still not known. Some people say she fastened the restraining device, other people say she did not. Her passenger and she were both catapulted to their death just south of Boston, over Dorchester Bay, Squantum Field at Quincy, Massachusetts. Harriet also wrote about how that we should have mapping, we should have landing fields, that petrol would be available, we should protect the borders of the United States with aeroplanes. And Harriet thought that someday, she was a visionary, she thought that someday that women as well as men could make a handsome salary at flying people from town to town. And she wrote about also that she envisioned that someday we would fly these giant aeroplanes to the capitals of our distant world neighbors in safety and comfort, faster than a locomotive or a steamship. And that's what we do today. If you need a mentor and you can't find one that's alive, and I think you should have many mentors, not just one, read about Harriet. I think you might find the keys, the elements, and the ingredients of what it takes to be successful in a risky business. Thanks.
Thanks, Connie. Now, I understand you brought some film footage, Harriet.
Okay. Oh, yes. We have 1912 original film footage. It's black and white, silent, of course. And if you'll run it now, please, the Quimby footage video clip. Take a look at how high she gets the tail on takeoff of that Bellario.
We have a monitor.
FM, 1210 AM, and EAARadio.net.
Need help promoting your company? We can help. EAA Radio is heard by thousands of aircraft owners and pilots and aviation enthusiasts every day at AirVenture and during the rest of the year at EAARadio.net. Sponsorship opportunities are available right now. Contact us at info@EAARadio.net. Call us at 920-550-1210. That number again is 920-550-1210. 1210 or come visit us on the field during Air Venture. From Whitman Regional Airport in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, welcome back to Theater in the Woods on EAA Radio.
I know here at EAA at the Pioneer Airport, a Blériot that was restored by some of the volunteers here flew about a month and a half, 2 months ago now. So be sure to see that while you're here at Air Venture. Well, our next guest, Connie Bullen. Connie, I've put together, well, you provided, but put together a little intro, if you will, for you to start your presentation. So if you'll begin the Connie Bullen intro, please.
Ed and Connie Bullen of Cedar Ridge, Georgia. Aviation has been at the heart of a love affair which has continued for nearly four decades. Growing up on a Tennessee farm during World War II, Ed Bullen spent countless hours gazing at a
we're
sky
having technical difficulties here.
And
all
other
right.
trainers that were flying from a nearby Army Air Corps training base. Though his feet were...
All right, we're supposed to have stopped right there, but okay. Now, I understand early on, your first involvement in aviation was as a flight attendant, was that correct?
That is correct.
And then something else happened after that, but let's run the next clip, please. And then we'll let you talk, okay.
The video is actually better. We could just play the video.
Delta flight attendant, Connie Jones, caught his eye.
Here we go.
And it's no wonder she did. A North Carolina beauty, she was a former prep basketball all-star and a former Miss Winston-Salem. And Ed quickly learned that while Connie's feet were in a passenger cabin, her heart had been on the flight deck since taking her first flying lesson while still in college. It was literally a match made in the heavens. 2 years later, in 1974, Ed and Connie were married. In addition to being a Delta captain, Ed owned and operated an aircraft sales and consulting business. It was a perfect opportunity for Connie to complete her primary flight training, which she did 1 year after they were married, and to begin to build hours toward her ultimate goal, a commercial piloting career. In addition to getting aviation qualified, Connie had another major obstacle blocking her dream of becoming a Delta pilot.
All right, well, they didn't quite start exactly what we wanted to do to talk about the flight attendant, so Connie, I'll turn it over to you. Maybe talk about what interested you in doing that, and then what led to then becoming an airline pilot?
I was very fortunate. The video was made for the occasion of my husband and I being inducted into the Georgia Aviation Hall of Fame, the first couple to receive that honor. So that'll give you a little explanation of why the editing here was a little last minute. I was very fortunate that when my interest in aviation was born, that I had people who helped me along the way, and that is what brings us all here in the AEAA spirit. So I can't say enough for those of you here in the audience who are interested in flying, and for those of you who are volunteers at EAA and who are helping other people, that flame that is an aviation dream that is unreachable by so many was unreachable for me until I met people who would help me along the way, my husband included. So it's about having a dream and moving forward. I was a flight attendant for Delta because when I started this aviation career, it was in the back of an airplane because they did not allow women to fly airplanes. The WASP flew in World War II and did an admirable job. They flew every type of airplane, and they were not allowed to come back and fly for the airlines. So it was, I had to wait my turn till the time was right.
Right. Well, we're glad that you did. And you flew for Delta for 33 years, is that right?
I flew for Delta 7 years as a flight attendant and was hired as a pilot in 1978. Then I flew 26 years as a pilot, took early retirement, and very lucky to be able to still fly. The airline flying is completely different than Warbird or corporate or any other flying, but there are so many good things about all the different facets of aviation that I'm fortunate to have enjoyed most of them.
Great. All right. Well, Kay, tell us your aviation experiences started in the Navy, is that right? You went to the Naval Academy and you were the second, I think, woman who went to the Academy. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's correct. And first of all, I'd just like to say it's a great honor to be here among all these women in aviation. Thanks so much for all that you do. And I hope that a few things that we say and a few things that you see here at Oshkosh this week inspire you to reach even further. I was so fortunate to be able to go to the U.S. Naval Academy. I grew up in Mobile, Alabama. And when I first went to high school, there were no women at the Naval Academy. That wasn't even a choice. But it opened up while I was in high school, so I was able to enter the Naval Academy in the second year that actually had women. After graduation, or actually prior to graduation, when I was trying to decide what I would do after I was commissioned as a naval officer, there were no naval flight officers in the Navy at that time. But again, that opened up prior to graduation. I was able to take advantage of that. I was able to fly P-3s in the Navy. I flew out of Naval Air Station Patuxent River, Maryland. Flew oceanographic research missions for the Naval Oceanographic Office. It was considered non-combat missioned. We had no weapons on board. Our airplanes were painted orange and white, international orange and white. It's kind of the international symbol of peacetime, and we even had cartoon characters painted on the front. And we flew missions all over the world. We were gathering research information specifically for the anti-submarine warfare missions. We are gathering temperature, density, salinity, and ambient noise information from the oceans worldwide. So in the first 3 years of flying with the Navy, I hit 26 different countries and had 1,500 flight hours. I really took to heart that slogan, join the Navy, see the world.
I guess so.